Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. As we launch into this conversation, I'll remind you that today is Cinco de Mayo. And what does that mean? That means this is in 1862 when the Mexicans defeated the French, not Mexican Independence Day. But it's becoming more and more important in America because in this country now, it looks like we're finding out that there are 15 million people in our nation who are of Mexican descent, which is a growing part of our world. And we know we're living in this 21st century where pretty soon there will be no single majority in America of any racial or ethnic group, and America will finally be what it's meant to be, which is not a bad thing. So Cinco de Mayo, one of my favorite holidays, tip of Mexican beer, have a little tequila, but don't drive when you do that. Please, don't do that.
I love it. I wish I were in Mexico.
Me too.
Me gusta Mexico.
I would love to be in Mexico right now. But we're here in Baltimore, and I love Baltimore.
Yeah, and I'm glad to be here.
And we're going to talk about Baltimore this hour. There are two things going on here we're going to have a discussion about. The first has to do, and they're actually connected in many ways, Councilwoman Mayor Pat Clark, who represents the 14th District on the Baltimore City Council, introduced a measure on Monday that will require major retailers in Baltimore, and we'll describe that in a minute, to pay a living wage. And there is a major retailer on the move to move to Baltimore, and that retailer is Walmart. Right, would move into where A.D. Anderson is now on 25th Street. This is a huge lot, and they're moving out, and Walmart wants to move in. We're also joined this hour by Judith Kunst, who is president of the Greater Remington Improvement Association and chair of the task force committee working on this project. And Judith, good to see you again.
Nice to see you.
Last time we were talking about dogs in the park, and now we're talking about Walmart. Good to have you back. Brendan Coyne joins us, who is a member of the Be More Local Steering Committee and a member of the board of directors of the Charles Village Civic Association. Brendan, good to have you in the studio.
Thanks for having me.
And you all can join us here at 410-319-8888. We're going to start the conversation off about the living wage and then move into Walmart. Now, and the lines are open, 410-319-8888. You can join our conversation and weigh in on both of these subjects, 410-319-8888. And before we hear from two people who had ideas about living wage, one is Mike Saltzman, a research fellow at the Economic Policy Institute, who opposes it. And then we have an interview with Lee Reynes that we did earlier today, who is director of the University of New Mexico Bureau of Business and Economic Research, because Santa Fe is one of the few places in America that actually voted in a living wage for all of its businesses. And she'll talk about how it worked in Santa Fe. Lovely little city that it is.
I love Santa Fe.
Who doesn't?
It's a wonderful place.
I'd be nuts not to love Santa Fe. So, but Mary Pat, let me
now
ask you
I
first.
Now I love it more.
Before
you can actually make a living there.
Well, that's why they did it. But we're going to hear that in those interviews idea. First. But first, I want you, if you would briefly, Mary Pat, describe to us the bill.
First of all, let me say what living wage is. It was actually invented, really, here in Baltimore City. And through the Build organization, their congregations and pastors and communities. Basically, it's an hourly wage, which is based on the annual federal poverty threshold level for a family of four. That's a lot to absorb. But what it means is that as of July 1 this year, if you're a family of four earning $22,025, you are just on the threshold of poverty, not you're a step above it.
Unless you actually make $24,000 and you think you're in poverty with a family of four, but anyway,
right?
Yeah, right.
So the hourly wage that goes with that is $10.57, mm-hmm. and that's what it will be in Baltimore City. We have living wage back to 1994. We adopted it for all our contractual workers. So if you work as a housekeeper in a public building for a contractor, or you help run a public garage for a contractor, you must be paid living wage. And every year it's adjusted upward as the poverty level gets higher. So that's what it is. It's $10.57 an hour. And basically, I've introduced, along with many co-sponsors in the city council, a living wage law that would apply to major retailers in Baltimore City who hire so many of the our local citizens. And a couple things. One is we're laying down a lot of fees and taxes right now on the people of Baltimore because of the shortfall in city government and needing to shore up the fire, the police, the kids. What are we going to give back? What can we give back? This is something that with support from the community, we could give back. It's fair enough to the men and women who are working in major retail in Baltimore City and who would like to be able to support their families with their jobs. It applies to major retailers. They're the ones who gross $10 million a year in sales. That includes parent and affiliate companies when you look at the income stream. So it's a lot of our employers, and it seems to me something that we could all do together to help Baltimore City citizens.
Well, let me ask, let's play these two very quick interviews that we did today about the living wage, and we'll come back and talk about them with all of our three guests because everyone in this room supports this idea. But how does that fit into Walmart? We're going to talk about that as well, and we'll lead into our Walmart conversation. But let me let you, for this first interview is with Mike Saltzman, research fellow at the Economic Policy Institute. You think this is a bad idea, Mayor Pat Clark's bill. Talk about why you think this bill is counterproductive from your perspective.
Baltimore's dealing with budget problems right now, and they're looking at, you know, even looking at some unpopular ways to close the gap. City's unemployment rate is over 10%. I think the council needs to be thinking about encouraging big retailers to locate in the city. You know, they pay taxes, they create jobs for the community. But if they can choose, you know, $7.25 an hour in Baltimore County versus, you know, $10.19 an hour in the city, I think there's no competition. They locate elsewhere, especially because it's a city. You know, employers have a choice of where they want to locate because it's not that much further of a drive to go to one just outside the city line. And, you know, I think businesses that are already there are going to be forced to make tough decisions. There's like a large body of economic literature on the impact of any kind of like increase in the minimum wage. It's an economic consensus almost. You know, you raise the cost to hire and train either teens or people who have less experience, and what happens is they don't get hired. There are fewer jobs for them to fill.
Now, a couple of questions about that. I mean, do you see this bill as going beyond? Some people call this another Walmart bill, which kind of didn't pass constitutional muster the last time.
Right, that was the healthcare one they tried to do at the state level.
Right.
Okay.
And so, but some people argue that this bill would affect more than just Walmart. That it would affect could affect major drug chains and other companies, maybe even Starbucks and McDonald's.
Sure, and you know that's. I think whether you're talking about a large retail store, a large restaurant chain, whatever, there's this kind of view out there that these companies can just kind of magically handle new costs. But the reality is that, you know, like for instance, large retail stores have low profit margins just like small retail stores do, you know, 2%, 3%. So the idea that these companies can kind of shoulder a 40% increase in labor costs, you know, without any consequences, and especially when they can choose to locate elsewhere, I think just divorced from reality.
I mean, is there any evidence that this has been the case when people have passed living wages in America or wages that are comparable to this $10 an hour that they have actually chased large retailers out of communities?
Well, one of the places that was kind of at the, I guess, the forefront of the living wage thing was Santa Fe, New Mexico. And in Santa Fe, I've seen, economic research from the University of Kentucky, and they implemented their living wage, I guess it was early last decade. And, a study, kind of a after-the-fact study from the University of Kentucky found that the city's living wage, it increased the risk of unemployment and decreased the number of hours worked for less educated members of the city workforce. And a similar kind of impact study was done for Chicago back when they were considering a similar policy, like kind of a big box policy ordinance back in 2006. And, you know, that study estimated a reduction in employment at big box retailers that would be as high as 10%. And part of that was from retailers choosing to locate elsewhere. And that's part of the reason why, in that case, Democratic Mayor Richard Daley decided to veto the bill even after the city council passed it.
Are you saying that this was did not work? It was a failure in Santa Fe?
Yeah, well, I mean, absolutely. So they passed it in Santa Fe. And, yeah, I mean, sure, the wages are higher in Santa Fe now, but I think what happened is you increased the risk of unemployment, and then they found that the decreased the number of hours worked and that those effects were concentrated on less educated members of the city's workforce. And that's kind of the deal is, we were doing a study recently about literacy and education. I was looking at some Department of Education data that show there are 27 million people in this country who lack the basic skills needed to fill out a job application. So, the question is, how much do you pay someone? Or how much are you going to pay someone who can't read? We've lost the context of what an entry-level job is. It's a chance to prove yourself, to learn the skills needed to succeed in the workforce. It's kind of this invisible curriculum that comes from showing up to work every day, reporting to a supervisor, and punching the time cards. And then these are the skills you take to move up on the labor force and have a successful career. But I think if you raise the wage to $10.19 an hour, these jobs become more difficult to come by. And that's kind of how we closed our release. A living wage is no help at all if you can't get hired in the first place.
We're talking with Lee Reynas, who is director of the University of New Mexico Bureau of Business Economic Research, and our continuing look at living wage. And Lee, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you. It's nice to be on the phone.
It's good. I'd rather be in Santa Fe, but it's still good to talk to you. tell us a bit about the living wage law and how you think it has worked in the city of Santa Fe.
Okay. There was an ordinance which was passed back in 2003, which as of January 1st would have increased the living wage for workers in businesses with, I think, 25 or more employees to $8.50. And the same ordinance provided that 2 years later the wage would go to $9.50, and that 2 years after that it would go to $10.50. So originally it was planned to have a three-step implementation up to $10.50. And then we analyzed that first increase prior to the second phase, the implementation of the $9.50, and found that, in fact, the Santa Fe economy seemed to have taken this increase in its stride. It had good growth performance. The various things that had been feared did not materialize. Unemployment did not go up. In fact, it went down. Wages went up, employment expanded. Of course, there are many other things going on in the economy, but even when compared to another city, which was done, we did a whole statistical analysis of what happened in Santa Fe and compared it with the city of Albuquerque, things in Santa Fe looked fine. So it did not, there was really no evidence of harm. There were evidences of changes. There are obviously some businesses that were not happy about paying higher wages and some who sought various ways to avoid doing that. There were other employers, lots of employers, in fact, who, took it as this is the law and tried to live with it and figured out how to structure jobs and everything so as to make it work.
Earlier, we talked to someone in Washington from a think tank who was making the argument that what happened in Santa Fe, the negative side, he said, increased unemployment and decreased the wages, rural wages for households in Santa Fe. Can you comment on that?
I don't think that there's evidence that happened. I think there's evidence that you did have some changes in the structure of jobs, and you did have low-wage workers who might have had three jobs before, who now found that they could actually do fine, or at least no worse, on having two jobs. So you had some changes that were taking place, but I don't think you will find that kind of evidence that was cited. I just did not see a lot of negatives when we went in and analyzed.
I want to thank you so much for taking your time with us today, and this is something Baltimoreans and Marylanders need to hear.
Okay, great.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
All right,
have a good day.
You too. Bye. So let's talk about it here in Baltimore. I mean, let's talk about it very quickly, Mary Pat, politically. Is this something that's actually going to pass the city council?
It's possible. We have a lot of co-sponsors, and we have a depressed economy, which where people are struggling just to survive, and I think this would be a boost. So it's possible, yes. I hope it does.
When we talk about a living wage of $10 or so an hour, and we're talking about what it adds up to once it goes to $10.57, mm-hmm. that it's really only about $22,000 a year.
It's $22,025 a year gross.
Gross.
That's before
gross.
Any deduction. So a lot of people are trying to support families on a retail job, but it's real interesting what Lee said about the two or three jobs translating back into one. That's where Build began back in the 90s. People who were in the congregations of Build were working two and three jobs, many of them, and then by the end of the month still needed to come to the food bank at the church to just get through that last week because they weren't making enough money even with three jobs, and then they had no time to be home. And so this is about really trying to make the jobs in this sector worthwhile, careers.
But so this bill, if it mm-hmm. passed, would affect not just Walmart, if Baltimore comes to Baltimore.
No, no, no.
Opens the second store in Baltimore, but could affect Target.
Oh, yeah, lots and lots. Yeah, lots and lots. It's not about Walmart from my perspective. It's about, I see a change in which a lot of the big stores are saying, hey, you know, we got to get an urban policy and come to cities. And we know it's going to be different. It's not going to be the same as, you know, buying a farm in the country and, you know, a big parking lot. It's going to be a whole different thing. But we need this market and we like this market and let's go to cities. It is kind of new. And so here we are, and it is different, and our needs are different. But also, can the big stores help us out? Help the city? Help us with jobs that are careers, can support a family.
So let me ask this question on that. We are going to have. I wanted Mary Pat to kind of lay this out and give us an idea of what's going on and the trajectory of this in the city council. Very quick before we talk a bit about Walmart mm-hmm. is what.
It has just been introduced this past Monday. It is referred to the Labor Subcommittee, chaired by Councilman Warren Branch. It will be set in for hearing. It has not yet been. And there will be a public hearing, and there will be a vote of the committee, and then hopefully of the entire city council. I mean, we're going to hear from a gazillion affected parties. And we may make some amendments. Already in the bill it says you can trade off as much as $2 an hour of that wage for benefits if you're an employer. So, you know, we're trying to help everybody. We're grabbing a lot of money from everybody. We're trying to help the economy itself here in Baltimore, and I think it's for the good of the city.
Well, now, this next subject here is related to directly and indirectly to the subject of whether or not we want Walmart in Baltimore, another Walmart in Baltimore, and we will come back as this bill winds its way through city council for a good rip-roaring debate on
living wage,
which we need to have here in this city. I think it's going to be a very important discussion to have. Mayor Pat,
yes, I would like to be excused if you don't mind.
It's fine.
business presses, and thank you so much for the courtesy of being here.
It's good to have you. We'll come back and do this debate in the next.
Oh yeah,
weeks
yeah,
before
yeah.
This really hits the city council.
We'll probably have time before it goes to a final vote.
All right. Thank you, Mary Pat.
Thank you.
Always good to have you.
Bye.
So we are going to take a very brief break. Come back in less than a minute or so, and we'll be joined by Judith Kunst and Brendan Coyne to debate, do you want a second Walmart in Baltimore? Will it do good things for the city? Will it hurt small businesses? Will it help our consumers? We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner, and the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by Johns Hopkins Medicine. For the 19th consecutive year, the Johns Hopkins Hospital is ranked number one by U.S. News and World Report in their annual Best Hospital Survey. Find out more about the nation's top hospital at hopkinsmedicine.org. And we are now joined here by Judith Kuntz, president of the Greater Remington Improvement Association and chair of the task force committee working on this Walmart project, and Brendan Coyne, member of the Be More Local Steering Committee and a member of the board of directors of the Charles Village Civic Association. And Be More Local Steering Committee was founded to oppose the Walmart going that would be proposed to go into the where 80 Anderson Chevrolet right now at 25th. And Remington, is that right?
Well, that's the space, yeah. But we kind of came together around the project, but it's not our only thing that we're concerned with. We're very happy with Mary Pat's introducing the living wage legislation, and we're very interested in seeing Baltimore be more concerned with the plight of people who work in the city and live in the city, and we're more concerned with building healthy communities and having businesses work as partners in doing so.
So let's talk about this. Let's first go ahead. I'm sorry, Judith.
Well, I would like to say that Brendan and I have not met before this, and I'm glad to be here. You're on the same page with us. We want to see the communities work together, both business-wise and as communities with partnerships. And you're not on the task force with Charles Village. I understand you're on the board, but we are working with Charles Village and Old Goucher.
Correct. I should actually say that I'm speaking for Be More Local here, not for the Charles Village Civic Association.
Thank you.
I want to make that very clear.
Okay.
So let's talk about this. But you represent a lot of small businesses in Hamden and some other places that oppose this Walmart going in.
Yes.
That's fair to say.
Yes.
And I want folks to join us at 410-319-8888. What do you think about the proposed Walmart? Are you families that think we need this Walmart because it's a cheaper place for us to buy what we need? And that's important to us? Or are you saying we don't need this, we need to keep our small businesses alive, and what we don't need in the middle of our town is another Walmart? 410-319-8888. So let me turn to you first, Brendan, then we'll go to Judith. Just explain to me why. I mean, a lot of working families in Baltimore go to Walmart because it's an inexpensive place to buy food. It's probably the only place you can afford to buy organic food, that it's a place where people can find a second or first job that they're not going to find somewhere else, and that this could be a boon to the neighborhood and a boon to people's pocketbooks. So talk about why. What would you say to that argument?
Those points all sound good, but the reality as it's played out across the country with Walmart is different. The jobs that Walmart offers are generally, they pay substandard wages, they offer substandard benefits if the employees can afford to avail themselves of those benefits. If you take a look at the one Walmart that exists in the city now at Port Covington, it's essentially a wasteland surrounding the Walmart. The Sam's Club, which is owned by the same company, closed several years ago. We're just 8 years away from when that store opened, and none of the retail that was supposed to come along as promised by the original developer and then the second developer who took over the job ever materialized. And Walmart's, if you look in outside of cities, Walmart's all around, they tend to be kind of isolated places because other retailers don't like to compete with them, not because they don't like to, they can't, because Walmart is essentially the definition of race to the bottom when it comes to employment and when it comes to business practices. And it's I fear what it will do to the surrounding communities and the businesses, and essentially a Walmart job that the wages that the company offers allows you to shop at Walmart. I thought we did away with company stores in this country a long time ago, and I can't support seeing that in my community.
Judith Kunst?
Well, let me start by telling you that this is a very funny position for me to be in because I'm a union worker and I'm a shop steward. And since I've lived several lives, I've also been in retail business. My family had the oldest standing liquor license in Howard County, Maryland, which is where I moved here from. We have a very diverse community in Remington, very diverse. And there's a lot of people who have different income levels, different educations. And we're looking upon this Walmart as an amazing opportunity, but we're not looking upon it as just Walmart. This is going to have 30 retail businesses, 90 housing units. It's going to have Lowe's, Marshall's, Staples, Anna's Linens. All of these people and businesses coming in, I think, are going to generate so much for our community. And most of them are offering things we can't buy in the city.
Like what?
The funniest thing is we've been talking about underwear. I know it's kind of funny, but everybody says there's no place to buy underwear. Someone else mentioned coat hangers. Someone was talking about their husband coming off the ship into the Inner Harbor, and he had been at the sea for a long time, and he had no socks. Walmart has socks. I mean, it's kind of funny, but you can go there any hour and get what you need. The other thing, Port Covington, I don't like to compare Port Covington to this because what we're looking for here is a new Walmart. There was one built in Chicago. I know they want to put one in Manhattan. This is a smaller Walmart that they're building. It's going to have to be stocked more often because it is much smaller. It's only 93,000 square feet. It's going to be smaller than the giant they're putting in at the Rotunda, to put it in perspective for you, which will probably be the largest giant in the state. The developer is going to phase this whole project in 1 year, so it's not going to be like Port Covington where it's going to be half built. And the money drivers, obviously, are Lowe's and Walmart. What we're trying to do here is get jobs for people who really need them. We're working with the mayor's Office of Employment. We're working with a wonderful woman, Rosalyn Howard. We're offering education to people. We're going to fly our homes. We're going to start with a focal neighborhood. We're going to go in concentric circles to get people jobs. We're really working very hard.
So when you hear the argument here, Brendan, it's about generating jobs and being a place to find things we can't find anywhere else, why would there be opposition if we don't have businesses who are already offering what Walmart has?
There are already businesses offering largely. I mean, your example of someone coming off the ship in the Inner Harbor, there's the mall right there at the Inner Harbor that has a number of clothing stores, shoe stores, everything of this. I shop there occasionally.
I was going to say it's not practical things. I shop there too. I'm talking, you can't buy your kids' school clothes there. You can't buy socks for your kids there for that kind of thing. You can buy very expensive things there.
Or, you know,
it's a tourist destination spot.
You've heard this argument. Tell me what you think would happen if Walmart ended up and Lowe's and what did you say was else going there?
Anna's Linens, possibly Staples, Marshalls.
Possibly is a good point. It's our understanding that none of the proposed retailers have actually signed on for this project. I mean, a lot of this hinges on the PUD going through the PUD legislation, and it hinges on Lowe's and Walmart actually following through and opening up stores. And the other proposed tenants, at least from what I've seen, both through the Charles Village Civic Association and with Be More Local, there's no guarantee from any of the other retailers. So, I mean, that's a concern that there would actually be empty spaces in this development. It's something to think about. This is the first developer to come along for this project. It's 11 contiguous acres of essentially prime city property. It's just north of downtown. It's off 83. It's off of several arteries that people use to traverse the city and head out of the city. And it's probably not the wisest idea to jump at the first developer that comes along that says that, oh, I've got a plan for this.
Well, let me ask this question. Let me open the phones here, because I think people have a lot of both intellectual and visceral responses to the idea of Walmart and in building it. But many people would argue that if Walmart comes in, that Port Covington would close, just like the Walmart that was built in Baltimore County, the Walmart in Hunt Valley closed, and mm-hmm. they moved to the other larger Walmart. But let's see what our listeners think here. 410-319-8888. Do you shop at Walmart? Do you work at Walmart? Do you think that they are an anathema to small business or just an addition to what we need in our economy for people to buy inexpensive items? And what about how they treat their employees? We'll get to that in a moment as well. 410-319-8888. We'll start with Jim in Columbia. You're on the air.
Hi, good evening.
Good evening, Jim.
I'll just give you my comments and take your remarks off the air.
Sure.
Basically, it appears to me that there's a major shortage of large companies that want to invest and build in downtown urban centers. And any way you slice it, it's either a tax on the company coming in. Their profit margins are going to be the same regardless of where they locate it. So you're really cutting into the desire for people to have an urban strategy. And secondly, if they don't come, then it's a tax on the the people that live in the city who don't have access to those basic goods and services that everyone else enjoys out in the suburbs. And it's problematic. You've got to make it people want to be there, not make it harder. And I'll take your comments off.
So, bottom line, what are you suggesting? I'm sorry.
He's gone.
Judith, you want to start off?
Yes, I do agree with him that it is problematic because I leave the city every weekend to go shopping. And it's funny, I do go to the wine source in Hamden, and we go to the yarn shop in Hamden, which are two of my favorite stores. And I love Hamden. I eat there. You know, I buy the other two things. But really, when it comes to practical things, I cannot afford. I saw a really cute T-shirt the other day, $148. It was on the front step. And, you know, as much as I love Hamden, I just can't pay those kind of prices. And when we're talking in a city with 10% unemployment, I know other people can't pay those prices to come in and buy things like goods like that either.
It's unlikely that, you know, most people can afford goods like that. I definitely agree with that, but that's the exception. I mean, the most products you find at local businesses aren't $140. I, by contrast, I almost never leave the city. I, in fact, almost never drive. I work around the corner from my house. I live on Guilford Avenue. I do all my grocery shopping. I do the vast majority of it on foot. I do most of my clothing shopping. I walk most places I go. I know that that's not a possibility for everybody, mm-hmm. But it's certainly within, and I rarely leave Charles Village, or maybe Waverly is about as far as I go for my basic goods that I need for day-to-day living. And I don't see the same need for a giant retailer that carries everything under the sun. And then just let me throw in that if people are concerned about that, there is, and I don't want to pitch the store, but there's a Target just a couple miles away from the proposed site, which would seem to satisfy those same needs. And I also worry that a big box competition between, you know, low-end retailers like Target and Walmart will be harmful to the employees of both stores, to the communities at large, and also to employees of stores that sell related businesses who may have to drive down their wages or clothes or whatnot in the face of that sort of a price war.
Let me go back phones and come back. Judith will come right back at 410-319-8888. We have a number of people calling in here, including, looks like, Jay Howard, president of the Baltimore Urban League. And Jay, come on at the next caller, but we'll do these in order that they came in. And Boreen in Baltimore, you're on the air. Hi, Boreen, you're on the air.
Yeah, my name is Doreen.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I said B on my screen. I'm sorry.
That's fine. Yeah, I actually am a Remington resident, and, you know, I just wanted to call in and give my opinion as someone who lives in Remington that I wouldn't want a Walmart in my neighborhood. In fact, I've signed, I don't know, petitions that I've gotten through emails. I guess one caller said, you know, the city should make itself appealing to residents as the suburbs do. I know in my neighborhood, I would want recreation center for kids, parks, playgrounds. Those are the types of things that would make me want to stay in the city, not a Walmart. I guess my other point is, I don't know, I mean, not to get too off topic, but saw Michael Moore's Capitalism, a Love Story. And I mean, just to know that they take out health insurance policies on their employees and then benefit from their deaths and don't give any of that money to families, it's pretty sick to me. But that's my comments. Thank you.
Doreen, thanks so much. And I'll read a couple of comments that have come across on our Facebook page since this discussion started, and then we'll open the phones again here and come back to our guests. Lewis Shaw writes in, no, particularly in an area of the city designed to cause maximum congestion. Well, let's tackle that one for a minute before we go to our – and John Dornheim, who writes, no. Bethany Dinger writes, heck no, no more Walmarts anywhere. But Emily Say writes in, I used to think no, but have since heard some great arguments about providing jobs and access to fresh food in an area that is currently a food desert. I say okay. So let's go back up, and then we'll go back to the phones. The argument that – the congestion argument.
This is something that Judy can definitely address because it's something at the task force that she's been involved in has tried to work very hard with the developer on making sure that the traffic patterns work for the spot.
Thank you. We have been working very not only with the developer, the Department of Transportation is involved. And for those of you who have never worked with something like this, what happens is a TIS, it's a traffic impact study. and with Walmart coming in. This was before Walmart was coming in. We are doing the biggest traffic impact study that's ever been done in Baltimore City. There are 28 intersections being studied. And with the 28 intersections, when we get back the traffic impact study, I've been getting quite an education. I've had to research how to look at these intersections and find out what the traffic will do to them. For example, on Saturdays and Sundays, no matter what we put in there, if it's retail, that's when your heaviest traffic is, from like noon to 5. And Remington is a wonderful neighborhood. I'd like to tell the woman who just called, I'd love to have her come to our GREA meetings, because we're doing a lot to make Remington even better and upcoming. But with the traffic impact study, we had traffic calming even before this, and Sharon Gita is working with us on this too, from Charles Village. There's about 8 or 10 of us on the traffic impact study. We, as soon as it comes in, we will sit down with the developers and go over every single intersection. Their concern is with the PUD, what's on site. We are just as concerned with everything surrounding the site as on the site. And we're working with bicycles. We want bicycle lanes. We want pedestrians to be safe.
Well, let me just ask a question, though, because we don't have a lot of time.
Okay.
But the question is, I would ask, how could, whether you like Walmart or not coming, how could a Walmart, Lowe's, whatever else is there, these huge stores, not cause congestion? I mean, why would you'd have to either widen streets, find some way to get in and out? I mean, that's a lot of traffic. I mean, those stores attract a lot of traffic.
You can also make certain streets from that are one-way, two-way, make one-way streets two-way. For example, 24th Street in the corner of Sisson, there's a serious concern. And one of the concerns right now is not the Lowe's coming in, which will be the level of the level that they'll be, the neighborhood will see right there, but it's the buses and the taxis going around there. So we want to not only prevent traffic from the Lowe's and make the neighborhood be safe, we want to prevent the bus and traffic.
But there's no
too.
Way around the congestion thing. I mean, it will create congestion, which a lot of people are concerned with, in not just directly in Remington, but the surrounding neighborhoods too, because the flow will be huge in Charles Village, it'll be huge in Remington, it'll be huge in Old Goucher, it'll be large in Hamden. I mean, this is the impact of this development on traffic-wise is gigantic.
When the rotunda's finished, I don't know what they've done with the traffic impact for that, but we should study that also in conjunction with this.
Let me get a bunch of callers on roll here. A lot of people are calling in and have comments on this, so let's get hear their voices. 410-319-8888. Renee, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I think this is a really interesting topic, but I'm just really wondering why it is that when we say we want to improve a community, we automatically think that it means bringing in these huge retail conglomerates. And I don't shop at Walmart any longer after I've done some research and found out really how this, extraordinarily wealthy retailer treats their employees. And we keep talking about jobs, 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 but let's talk about quality. And the caller that called before me, actually, I was going to say the same exact point. I mean, not to go to Michael Moore, but I mean, I haven't heard anyone address kind of just the overall outlook of this particular retailer and all of the retailers that are proposed. You know, what about this taking out insurance benefits on their employees and then not turning around and really treating their employees well? I mean, I can say this. Walmart was my husband's first job. And, I mean, even as a 16-year-old, he's like, oh, I don't ever want to do that again. But, I mean, let's just be really honest. Building better communities does not mean making the wealthy even wealthier. Thank you, and I'll take your comments off the air.
Thank you, Renee.
Renee is absolutely correct in that. I mean, the quality of the jobs coming into the development is a key concern for Be More Local, which is one of the reasons why we've been pushing as part of the 13 points that we'd like included in the PUD legislation, that the any retailer that goes in there, that they pay the Maryland State Minimum Living Wage, which is $12.25 an hour. Mary Pat's legislation, again, it would help these sorts of jobs, and it would force the employers to pay something that is decent and maybe not make a toilsome, somewhat abusive job feel quite so bad.
Let me ask you, Brendan, $12.25, there are 30 small retail businesses coming in. How are the small shop owners going to pay that?
Well, I guess it depends on the size of the business. I believe that we are looking for employers, for businesses that employ 25 people or more, to pay the Maryland state living wage. I mean, that's the point that we're putting across. It's not really, if a business doesn't see it's feasible, then they wouldn't want to go in there. I mean, that seems clear enough to me, and it's certainly understandable they wouldn't. But a company like Walmart, a company like Lowe's, a company like Anna's Linens, they certainly have the revenue to be able to pay those sorts of wages. They decide to do other things with their money.
They do, but we have other businesses coming in. We have restaurants coming in. We're going to have coffee shops coming in, and they're not going to be a chain necessarily. They're going to be private people who are doing entrepreneurship, and I don't know how they're going to pay $12.25 an hour and give benefits if you're just starting a business off.
Let me go back to the phones here. We have a lot of people here. Let's get their thoughts. 410-319-8888. Before we go to Jay Howard, Cindy, you're on the air. Cindy in Remington.
Hi, I just wanted to say that I live in Remington. I have a lot of neighbors that are very excited about this, as I am. And
in a positive way, you mean?
In a very positive way. Mm-hmm. I talk to people on the street a lot. I go down to Long John's, which is a local bar, and it's what people are discussing, and what they want is to be able to have a job. There's a lot of people that are saying, wow, you know, this could be a chance for us to finally get something, because there is not any place in Remington to go like this. You can go to Charles Village and try and get a retail job, but, you know, that's not a big opportunity. To have Lowe's and Walmart coming in, and, I mean, that's what everybody is excited about. Yes, traffic is an issue. But the jobs is a big plus. And if we can get the thing that Mary Pat was talking about before, that'd be great.
So you're talking from your perspective that the working class, middle class neighbors in Remington see this as
we're not even working class. We're lower.
Gotcha. I got you, Cindy.
You know.
Right.
I would like to ask one question though.
Sure.
For the other guy, and then I'll get off the phone. Where does he get his underwear in the city?
good.
Target.
Okay, I'll
be honest about that. Target. It's.
Thank you.
It's a weakness.
Okay. Cindy, thanks for your call. Let's take a couple of callers in a row here, if we could, if you don't mind. A lot of people have a lot of different ideas. Jay Howard, you're on the air. Thanks for holding. He's president of the Baltimore Urban League.
Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you, Jay.
Because the Baltimore Urban League, you know, we service a great population of individuals. When you talk about 10% unemployment in Baltimore, in certain pockets of the city, you're talking 20 to 30% or higher, like Cindy said, in their neighborhood. It's tough out there. So I, any job is better than no job, in my opinion. And I think Walmart or any other of those stores that have been named to go in there, to punish them with a living wage kind of bill and single them out, to me doesn't make a lot of sense for Baltimore, as we are now suffering as it relates to now looking at putting another burden on the city taxpayers, especially the poor who don't have good transportation to go out to the counties with the soda tax. So we got to look at what's best in the best interest of our citizens. Any job is better than no job, and the first job leads you on to a career. Because Walmart has a good career path for a lot of people who stay with Walmart. I've talked to a number of people who work for Walmart who started off at the entry level and have moved up to be managers of stores now. So there's plenty of opportunities out there, even with the Lowe's and the other stores they're talking about coming in there. So I just think we need to take a good step back and look at Baltimore City. It's a city that's hurting with a high unemployment rate. You say 10%, right. Go to some of these neighborhoods, Mark, it's 20, 30, and 40% unemployment. Where are these folks going to get jobs?
The jobs argument is strong. I'm going to read an email here, then go to somebody who disagrees with that, who's on the line here, and hear what he has to say. But, Jay, two things. I mean, A, I would look forward to having you on this show for an entire hour to talk about.
I'd be happy to come on.
We're looking forward to having you on this program. And let me read a Facebook post and then go to Ben, who has an opposite point of view, and we'll have at it here. Chris in Remington writes in, the well-known arguments about Walmart putting local shops out of business doesn't really apply to Baltimore. This is not a small town in the middle of nowhere in Texas. The shops on the avenue sell completely different goods at completely different price points than Walmart. Last I checked, Walmart doesn't sell comic books, fancy shoes, or sex toys. There's plenty of room in Baltimore economy for all different kinds of stores. Two, he writes in, a clear majority of people in Remington are fully in support of Walmart coming here. As Ms. Constwell well knows, it would be the height of arrogance for GRIA to publicly support oppose Walmart when her neighbors want her to support it. Well, you do support it.
Absolutely.
Right, that's what I thought. If Hamden opposed a development in their own neighborhood and a bunch of people from other neighborhoods tried to kill it, how would Hamden feel? People have the right to speak out, but shouldn't it tell you something when so few people from Remington are opposing it? So if you want to hold on a second, Jay, you can comment for a minute as well. But let's go to Ben in Baltimore, who I think has an opposite point of view. Ben, you're on the air.
Hey, Mark. Hey, Brendan and Judith. This is Ben Ray from the Hamden Merchant.
I figured that's why I said you had opposite point of view. I thought that was you. Go ahead.
This is a great conversation you guys are having. I just wanted to point out a few things, and, of course, I wanted to comment on the way that Hamden is kind of being characterized in the conversation. And then I'll, you know, take your responses off the air, of course. Number one, in terms of Judith raised a point about where people can shop in Baltimore City to buy cheap underwear and cheap socks and things like that. And I think Brendan did comment on this. I'd like to point out that there is a Target in Baltimore City, and there's also a failing Walmart already located in Baltimore City, as well as most of the chain convenience, not the convenience stores, but the pharmacy type stores like CVS and Rite Aid that I've noticed seem to carry underwear and socks. So those people that are in need, there are places you can find. Go take a look, and we can change our socks and underwear healthily. In terms of Hamden, Judith made a comment about looking for T-shirts and finding a $150 T-shirt in Hamden. That does sound, if you're looking for a $5 Hanes T-shirt and you see a $150 T-shirt in Hamden, that does sound outrageous. But what you're looking at is two completely different things, I think. I think what she was referring to is more than likely a artisan T-shirt that was handcrafted as opposed to just a utility T-shirt that people like to wear. But the conversation itself, the thing that concerns me most, and obviously that concerns a lot of members of our association, and I would like to point out that while we are named the Hamden Merchants Association, we do represent we do have members of our association located in Woodbury, we have members located in Medfield, and we have members located in Remington. And a number of our merchants are very concerned about this development. And the main reason why, and this is the point that I want to get to, and then I'll take comments off the air, is I'm just wondering if anybody there is familiar with the Loyola University study of the Austin neighborhood in Chicago that found that when the Walmart moved in within a 4.5-mile radius, approximately 85% of the businesses that sold any competing merchandise went out of business within 2 years. So when Hamden is looking at, or Charles Village, rightfully so, or any other neighborhood is looking at this development, it's because it's well within a 4.5-mile impact zone. And what that means is, I appreciate the comic book comment that the emailer made before, and I personally am not afraid for my own business. But what does concern me is if this Walmart puts our giant out of business, or puts our Superfresh out of business. If this Lowe's puts any one of our 8 local hardware stores out of business, whether it's Falcon Hands or Circus Hardware or Bell Hardware or the Ace Hardware, I mean, these are all going to be blighted storefronts that are going to be sitting here in this economy. And what we're going to have is we're going to have a Walmart that people talk about jobs. This Walmart isn't going to create jobs. It's just going to replace existing jobs with lower paying jobs and with lower benefits that cause people to have to go into social safety net programs that then is going to cost the taxpayer even more money. And so that's what my concern is. And I'd like to hear your comments, please.
I guess we should start first with Judith.
I, having been in a family retail business, find that a retail business, unless you're really doing well, is a day-to-day concern. We worried about everything. We worried about the snow. We worried about the holidays. This economic climate that we're in right now, I'm worried about every business around. That's why I support small businesses. I go to all of them, you know, that I can. I purchase there when I can. I can't imagine that the Walmart's going to be the straw that breaks everybody's back. I think the backs are already bending very badly right now. I work for a national organization. We have a rate of employment that's absolutely incredible. We have men who don't have insurance right now. They can't support their families. They're waiting for the economy to pick up. There's no building. And I really don't think that you can blame this economy on Walmart and what Walmart is doing to businesses. I know that this winter, everybody I talk to in the restaurant business particularly, the blizzard alone did them in.
But whether it's a good or a bad thing, you can argue
right.
This. But Lowe's coming in, if Lowe's came in, it would put those local hardware stores out of business eventually.
Many, many people that I've spoken to love their little hardware stores.
No, but I mean, but people...
And,
they,
and will still shop their little hardware stores.
But
right,
it won't be the same. I mean, there is clear evidence that when a huge box store like that comes in, that mom-and-pop hardware stores are gone. I mean, then that is... I mean, it won't affect Ben Ray's comic book store. It won't affect Soupçon in Hamden or places like that, but it mm-hmm. would affect...
Hardware stores.
Hardware stores and other small businesses, they won't survive it.
Judy, you made a couple of comments that...
And good or bad, I'm not making a judgmental question about what I'm saying. I'm saying mm-hmm. I think that is close to a matter of fact.
Right. But you made a couple of comments that confuse me. The one is you said that you can't blame the economy on Walmart, and nobody's done that here.
No.
But
the businesses are... I don't think most of these businesses are doing well. I would like people to be upfront about the bottom line.
Well, that was going to be my second comment,
yes.
is you saying that and then saying that Walmart, you don't think that Walmart's going to be the straw that breaks the camel's back. It seems if the back's already bending and you bring in a extremely low-end retailer into the business, that any business around that is struggling, the customers that they lose to that new retailer, to Walmart in this case, mm-hmm. is actually likely going to close the business. So it seems to run counter to actually what you said.
Let me hit somebody at the phone real fast here. Get a couple calls before you end of the hour. Omar in Hunt Valley, you're on the air. Omar, are you there?
Thank you for taking my call.
Go ahead.
My comment is very brief, and I have to side with the gentleman that is there. I've only seen the large retail stores like the Walmarts and the Lowe's simply shut down the small mom-and-pop stores. And we all know the history here in the United States, how we have gone from a country where in the 30s, 80-90% of everyone that worked in a mom and pop store or small businesses.
But that doesn't exist anymore.
And today, what do we have? It's the opposite. The tables have turned, and 90% are corporate employees. And it's the old, elementary saying, you put all your eggs in one basket. So when one company of that magnitude fails, the impact is great. I truly believe that we should go back to basics. I've seen the damage that these large stores do to the small mom-and-pop stores. I saw Lowe's go up, and directly across the street, a lumber store just have to shut their doors immediately because this is a fact. But there are some truth to the fact that I don't think Walmart, they are doing well because they're global. But to walk through their stores today, and they're not as busy as they were. We all know it's because of the economy. But I think the American public, we will all support the mom and pop stores. I mean, I went to lunch today to a Wegmans up here in Hunt Valley, and it's a beautiful store. I love it. It's great. It's got everything.
Right.
You can you don't have to move from there, and you can yes, you can buy your your tube socks and your underwear and still have a roast beef sandwich. That's wonderful, but I'll tell you the fact is I still like sitting in a small Italian restaurant, quaint, maybe 6-7 tables, and I'll enjoy that company much.
I'm sorry, we're just almost out of time, so I just want to say that I wish we did have more time for this, and we will come back to this subject and bring a longer debate on the air because I think it deserves it. Clearly, there are people on all sides of this issue, and I think it's something we have to work out as a community about which way we're going to go. And I want to apologize to all these callers who are calling we can't get to, Becky and John and David and all the rest who are calling in. We need to do that, and I thank Judith Kunz for taking her time, Brendan Coyne for taking his time, and we will come back to this.
Thank you, Mark.
It's good to have you both here.
Thank you very much.
Earlier, I called something Mike Saltzman. I said he was the Economic Policy Institute. It's the Employment Policy Institute that he works for. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite. This month, Urbanite explores the city's contemporary art scene and prospects for leveraging this cultural energy into a force for broader community change. Urbanite is available at over 800 locations. You can visit www.urbaniteBaltimore.com for a complete list of pickup locations. We come back from this break. We'll be talking to interesting filmmakers at the film festival, Night Catches Us, and Putty Hill. Stay with us. We'll be right back.